Good afternoon, it's Jack Murray and welcome to the second edition of Media Flash in audio version. I'm joined today by Micheál Cleishan.
Hello.
Owen Dillon.
Sup.
And for the first time, Adele Blake.
Hello.
So we're just going to look at some of the stories that took our interest in the media in the last couple of weeks. The first one, a Twitter story. On Twitter is about to, or the Library of Congress in America, for some strange reason, want to archive all the tweets that were ever sent.
Well, in typical American fashion, what they want to do, they say, is to collect the story of America and to acquire collections that would have research value. Don't know how much research value would be involved in that, given some of the tweets. But they signed the deal back in 2010 with Twitter, but the only thing is that deleted and locked tweets won't be collected. But still, given that Americans send over 400 million tweets a day, it's an awful lot.
Now, anybody has an iPhone, if you take 400 million, which is a lot of zeros, and you multiply it by 365, the iPhone can't process the number, it's so big. It's 1.46E plus 11. I'm pretty good at maths, and that even scares me. What's your take on this, Micheál?
I think it's a great idea. I think if you're going to find out what the story was at a certain time, you want to hear it from the people. And I think this is the first time that we'll be able to get history from the point of view of the people. It's always written by historians, or you know, the research is always taken from the journalist's point of view, and they're the, you know, the select few who could write at the time. So if we're to look back at the history of the Obama election or something like that in 100 years time, what better way to find out what people actually thought than look at what they said literally?
It is kind of disturbing and a little bit worrying that the kind of dross and nonsense that people tweet is worthy of an archive.
It's not going to make us look good as a race. It's going to signal how primitive and how stupid some people are. But yeah, it's pretty much going to be an exact timestamp of the time.
One of the other big challenges with this is that the next big push in computing is that all computing will become utilities, so they say, and that the actual amount of storage space required for this is something massive, I would imagine.
Yeah, 133,000 gigabytes of storage space to be made available for it. I'm not good at maths at all, so what I was doing was picturing all these iPhones with 8 gigabytes written on the back and lining them out. Probably cross the world with that amount.
Cool. Okay, yes, Micheál?
No, it's just they haven't got the technology to search and store them just yet. They actually will have to wait for an advance in technology before we're able to search them. It's just kind of the beginning stages.
Now, the second story that really caught our interest this week, and Adele, you brought this to our attention. I'm a cynic. I'm a very keen follower of marketing, and when I hear somebody engaged in a non-marketing campaign, that really irks me. So tell me what Selfridges are at, and tell us a little bit about this campaign.
Okay, it's called the No Noise campaign. So it's basically the idea behind it is that they're trying to like get their customers to take a break from all the information and all the stimulation that they get on a daily basis. And by doing that, they decided to debrand all their products, including their trademark yellow bag. And basically, there's a quiet room, a quiet shop, where you go in, there's basically nothing, no announcements, no people bothering you, just nothing, even on the products, no labels or anything. There's also a silence room where you go to just sit and do nothing, which I think is kind of pointless. And also there's Headspace, which I gather is kind of meditation. You put on these little headsets and you get nice music and thoughts.
Well, it's funny because one of the big kind of psychoanalytical trends of the last couple of months has been the phrase of mindfulness. And when we started, nobody around this table is responsible for this, but when we started discussing this yesterday in the office about mindful things that people do, it was suggested about taking a shower in the dark. And one of our colleagues, who we won't name him, he's from Kennedy, his response to taking a shower in the dark was, "You might fall and split your head."
Split yourself, yeah.
But, I don't know what the rest of you think.
It's essentially like taking a nap during the day, but you're awake. Isn't it just kind of switching off from absolutely everything around you, forcing yourself? Is that kind of what they're trying to get at, isn't it?
Well, I think one of the big things with department stores is sensory overload. Now, I do think there is something cynical about introducing kind of, what is sensory deprivation into a shopping experience.
Yeah, I think in reality you're just going to get, as far as the silence room goes, I'd say you just find little old ears sitting in there taking a break from their
shopping. Do you get your own cubicle?
No, it's just a room with a bench.
How stupid would you feel sitting with some fella beside you? How do you acknowledge that you're both there? Do you just kind of give the nod?
Can you imagine Lidl or Aldi doing something like this?
Contemplate
the beans.
Yeah, every 20 seconds, some lad are roaring off or into a hatch or something. Some lad selling an ironing board into a hatch or selling your dishwasher tablets for 10 cent. Like you'd get a break for about 60 seconds and then someone had a roar at you. Yeah, well, that's interesting. Michal, every week we've shared kind of hundreds and thousands of stories every month, and just one particular story since the start of the year, which has through social media that we shared on mediahq.com, has caught your interest.
Yeah, there's one story that caught my eye in particular. And this is from the Dogs Trust. And it's just a little story about basically the amount of surrender calls that came in over the Christmas. So they experienced, the Dogs Trust, of course, are an animal welfare charity. And they experienced a 50% increase in the number of surrender calls over Christmas, which is kind of sad for all dog lovers. I know that Edel is a dog lover as well.
Yes.
But what was really interesting, and it shows the power of the internet alone and what people want to read on the internet. But this story went up on, I think it was January 8th, and within 4 or 5 days had over 2,500 views on it.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't get this in that. I think, you know, people are thick. Every year this happens, and if it's spiking this year, okay, there's genuine welfare concerns and people are hard up and they can't mind a puppy, but how does something that you get on the 20th of December have to be handed back on the 2nd or 3rd of January? And people need to have a lot more cop on in that. Yeah, it's a cliche, it's for life and not for Christmas.
What's surprising is the turnover, though. By Thursday, like January 3rd, they had a 15 week old Jack Russell, a Chihuahua, 8 week old another Jack Russell again. I just can't understand how quickly they're getting rid of them after, like you said.
Yeah, and the fascinating thing was that within a couple of hours up and us sharing the story on Twitter and on Facebook, it had broke through 500 views, it broke through 1,000 views. Within about 24 hours, it had gone to 1,500 views. So it's an interesting thing to say, you know, puppies and kittens are all the rage. Next story, which, you know, never out of the news, Facebook. And Facebook is a source of jealousy, Owen. I recently saw a friend of a friend on an exotic Pacific island. And I didn't know the guy, so I couldn't technically be jealous of him. But that Facebook, a survey shows that Facebook is a source of a lot of the green-eyed monster.
Yeah, I think it's something that deep down we all really knew, but wouldn't admit it. When we come off Facebook, we're just like, oh, I really wanted that slice of cake that somebody put a picture up. And, you know, you just feel a little bit kind of, I know it's envious, too strong a word, a little bit jealous. But, yeah, I think it's definitely true anyway. According to the report, that 1 in 3 suffer from general dissatisfaction with life after coming off Facebook.
But isn't that kind of funny in that Facebook has become the exhibitionist platform, that people go on Facebook to say how great they are. On New Year's Day, I jumped into the 40-foot and I couldn't wait to get a picture of me in the sea. And my wife was saying to me, what's wrong with you? You know, why did you feel the need to put a picture? Now, I don't doubt anybody was jealous of that, my crazy state of mind jumping into cold water. Yeah. But it is definitely, Michal, an exhibitionist platform.
Yeah, they kind of, Owen and I, Andy Dell, actually were talking about this before we record this. And when we broke it down into the gender profiles, that men seem to boast about their accomplishments and what they did, you know. And women then, there you go, I didn't even realize I was saying, but yeah, and then women get jealous about physical appearances and social interactions. And Edel and I were just saying that then we can never remember any time, I can't remember any time I've seen a lad check in somewhere with other.
Yeah, it's always girls that do the checking in.
Yeah, why is that?
Well, I don't get the whole checking in thing. And, like, I don't get Foursquare.
You're just boasting about being somewhere cool, that's all.
With people
with
as
cool
well.
People,
so that's kind of rubbing it in other people's faces. I'm with these people and you're not.
Or I'm not a hermit, I'm out on a Saturday night. It's like,
and that's obviously kind of, you know, a generational thing in that I'm be 40 this year. But I don't generally worry about going out on a Saturday night.
The study said that people in their 30s are the most likely to be impacted by jealousy about family relationships and holidays.
Now, the second Facebook story, and this comes in large block capitals about be afraid, be very afraid, is Facebook's graph search. And, you know, I'm on Facebook. We give lots of Facebook courses. And I really think Facebook is a difficult nut for people to crack. And this is where Facebook, essentially, Michal, can search through your timeline. And it's got some weird results.
This is basically a product of the breakdown in communication or business relationship between Google and Facebook. So Facebook are trying to develop their own search engine within Facebook to try and take away the search result monopoly, or the search monopoly that Google would have. I don't know how it's going to be. They're going to make everything on your timeline is going to be searchable, which is going to be a little bit iffy for some people, especially with privacy. The way I see it, it has a dilemma. It depends on how far it's going to reach. Is it going to reach to friends of friends, or is everybody searchable on Facebook?
But isn't there a kind of a time bomb? It might be overstating it, but there's a whole thing in the middle of Facebook now where people aren't fully au fait at all about which way their own personal privacy settings are being.
Yeah.
And people don't know what they're sharing with who, and they don't know, and they just have their settings the way they always have them, haven't got into them, wouldn't even know how.
Yeah.
And there's stuff being shared that people don't want shared.
There's all these snapshots of on Tumblr. Now, we can't use it in Ireland just yet, so it's only in America as of yet, because it's in beta form. But obviously Facebook didn't realise that the general masses are not the nicest of people and always search for the stuff that you wouldn't actually normally think. They've put in stuff like people who eat cake in New York or something like that. But of course the general masses are putting in searches like married people who like prostitutes.
Lovely.
Or Jewish people who like beef.
Okay.
Or all these others. So, you know, it's... Yeah, I think it's going to run into a dilemma. Is it going to stick to friends of friends, or is it going to broaden its search outside to everyone?
But it's
that's
also
going to run into so many problems.
It's also the next phase of Facebook versus Google, who
yes.
owns the internet.
Yeah.
And it's that thing of, you know, Google's motto is don't be evil, but let's see how...
It's healthy competition. I'm glad they didn't kind of join forces, because then they would just own the internet together. So I think it's healthy competition that they're at all.
Thanks for joining us in this edition, folks. Before we go, I just wanted to point out some of the stuff that's happening in the next couple of weeks. I'm giving a course on perfecting your LinkedIn profile, if anybody still wants to do that in the new year, on the 12th of February in Dublin. We have a Facebook workshop even on the 25th of February with Katie Moffat, and we're going to Cork on the 5th of March. All will be revealed tomorrow. We're bringing our social newsmaker to Cork, and there are even some Cork people talking. That'll keep the Cork people very excited. But we're partnering with UCC, and we're going to be sharing some of the stuff that we've learned about how to share social news. So thanks, Michal. Thanks, Owen. Thanks, Adele. And tune in 2 weeks' time. Thanks for listening.